It is time for our annual get-together, weekly get-together, actually, not annual, with Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. You'll find Arthur here live on a Monday morning at right around 7:35. Also, we broadcast on the weekend and during our 12 noon news block during the week. We say good morning to Arthur Schwartz. Good morning, Arthur.
And good morning to all of you and you. And it's a nice morning.
Yeah, and it's going to be a couple of nice days with temperatures getting up around 50, 55 degrees here.
Yeah, well, closer to 60 around here and beautifully sunny. And sadly, everything is about to bloom or has started to bloom about 3 weeks early. But I don't know if that has impacted our food markets. But I don't know what lately, I don't know how your experience, lately it just seems that the price of food has really gone up. And nobody's talking about it. And it's not just in restaurants, although that's unbelievable. I'll get to that in a second. But even, you know, at the supermarket. So I find this all very distressing as I had a cleaning woman a long time ago. She was very old, but she worked for me because we loved each other. She worked for somebody else in my building. And then at the end of her career, so to speak, she came to work for me. But she would take long breaks to go visit her relatives in the South. And I would say, why don't they ever come visit you? And she said, they can't, they tell me, because they're on a fixed income. And I say, oh, I'm on a fixed income too, except that I work for mine. Anyway, that's how I'm feeling lately. I'm on a fixed income, and everything is going way up. I also think of my grandfather, Bernard Schwartz. He was a waiter at a kosher dairy restaurant called The Famous on Eastern Parkway and Utica Avenue. I'm certain I have mentioned this before. He's my big food connection, you know, the big example of a man who cooked. Anyway, he came home one day complaining. And by the way, he worked until he was 87 as a waiter? And then he changed cigarettes from Lucky Strike to Marlboro for a lighter cigarette. Anyway, he came home one day and he's complaining that they raised the price of soup. A lot of people went there for soup and the basket full of rolls. They raised the price of soup from 50 cents to 75 cents. And I could hear his voice saying, who's going to pay 75 cents for a bowl of soup? So let's flash forward to the 1980s. And Bob Harned sees a dessert on a menu for $6 and thinks it's the end of the world as we know it. And my friend, may he rest in peace, Bill Proops, who was he was the executive chef for Lehman Brothers, and part of his job was to recommend restaurants to the partners at Lehman Brothers, besides supervising the kitchen, you know, where they ate in the office. And he came to dinner one night and said, well, the medium-priced restaurant, this is in the 80s, to high-priced it's $40 to $50 a person. And we all went, $40 or $50 a person? You try to get a meal in New York City for $40 or $50. that's why, by the way, there's a proliferation, be a nice thing, a good thing, of little single food some kind of ethnic food stores. There is, I don't know, I don't think much is going on in Manhattan, but there's lots and lots going on in Brooklyn. For this reason, it is something affordable. On the other hand, we have hugely expensive restaurants here in Brooklyn, even, that are you can't get into. I mean, restaurants where it's, you know, probably a minimum $100 a person. And young people, everybody's young to me these days, but the younger people don't flinch at paying these prices. My friend Roseanne, who does flinch, came back from eating in a Manhattan restaurant the other day, and she said, the least expensive glass of wine was $20. So for the first time, she ordered a beer. And it is one of the reasons I enjoy beer, is because it costs $8. You can get a great beer for $8 or $9, whereas you get a really ordinary small portion of wine for $20. And I laughed the other day when I was reading some reviews online, and they complimented this place for its inexpensive wine. Well, it was minimum $14 a glass for wine. And Roseanne was saying, I wonder what Europeans think when they come here, because you can buy wine in a French restaurant. France is an expensive country. Italy, for sure, you know, a few euro. For $5, you can get a carafe of really nice local wine. If you want to buy a bottle of wine, it'll cost 10 euro, 12 euro. That's, by the way, only $15. In fact, when I'm staying in Salerno, there's a shop I go to, and I stock up on these wines that I pay, even in a liquor store here, I would pay $20, and it's $5 there. That $20 bottle of wine in a liquor store, by the way, costs $60 minimum in a restaurant. In fact, there was another review I was reading where they were saying, oh, the wine list was very well priced. You could get something for $50. So, you know, the prices are... And I look at menus that have... I'm getting... This is normalized now, even for me. I look at a menu that has $18 pastas on it, and I say, oh, that's not so bad. Then again, I try not to eat pasta out of my own house because it's almost invariably... is that a contradiction, almost invariably?
No, but what's interesting about what you're saying...
Disappointing.
My father, because we used to be, when we were at the Concord, we'd go to the Concord, and I would like to order an extra baked potato. And my grandmother was with us once, and she wasn't used to going to the Concord. And back then, even a kid, the baked potato was like an extra buck or two. And Myron Cohen, who was appearing with my father, was at the table.
I have a Myron Cohen DVD, if you're interested.
He was sitting at the table. So the next show, while we were there for dinner.
Yes.
He had them send over like 5 baked potatoes for me.
Oh, wow.
And he's supposed to keep my grandmother happy.
Oh, yeah. And to make you happy.
Oh, make me. And also, my father used to always say to us, don't order what you can eat at home outside.
Well, yeah, I grew up with that thing, too. And my mother who loved to go to restaurants, and my father loved to go to restaurants because he was a food adventurer. My mother liked to go because, as she always said, we could probably eat better at home. But somebody waits on me, and I don't have to do the dishes. And that was her reason she liked restaurants. And I have the same philosophy, because certainly when it comes to pasta. I mean, I have to laugh at people. I don't laugh. It's disheartening for me to watch people eat mediocre to bad pasta in a restaurant, enjoy it, and pay a lot of money for it. When people rave about the simplest things, and they could make those simplest things at home, and even with the most expensive ingredients, because food prices have gone crazy, it's still a lot cheaper than going to a restaurant. Certainly, you can drink better at home. And I, by the way, this is another story that I've told ad nauseum, but my first big interview as a food journalist, I was 22 years old, was with a man named Murray Feinberg, who was a wine importer. He was otherwise known as Monsieur Henri. Do you remember Monsieur Henri? I'm not sure if that label is still around, but I know that the company was bought by PepsiCo at one point, a long time ago. Anyway, Monsieur Henri, otherwise known as Murray Feinberg, told me, he says, I'll tell you what I tell my children, never drink expensive wine in a restaurant. Save the good wine for drinking at home. In the restaurant, you just get like the cheapest wine on the list. And you know what? I learned later, but not from Murray, The cheapest wine on the list is often the one that gets the most thought in a good restaurant, because the owner wants to provide something.
And keep people happy.
Pardon me?
And keep people happy.
Yeah, but what's interesting is that the people don't want to order the cheapest wine on the list. So they don't want to look cheap. So the real one to look at is the next to the cheapest wine on the list, which often was the cheapest wine on the list until it didn't sell because nobody wants to buy the cheapest wine on the list. If you ask a good restaurateur, he'll tell you that this is a fact, not just even speculation on my part. So prices, I think I mentioned this last week because suddenly I rediscovered grapefruit. I haven't, because I take a statin. I was told you're not supposed to have grapefruit or grapefruit juice when you take statin.
Yeah.
It ends up not to be entirely true. You can have grapefruit juice in the morning if you take your statin at night, and vice versa.
Yeah.
You just can't swallow the statin with a big glass of grapefruit juice. That's not such a great idea. Even though the studies on this, the people were drinking a lot more grapefruit juice than just a glass of grapefruit juice. But anyway, I rediscovered grapefruit juice. And I thought, I used to love to just sit and peel a small grapefruit as like fruit. Like any citrus fruit. And I think I did mention a couple of weeks ago, I was craving citrus. So it's in my market, the cheapest grapefruit is $2.
Yeah.
One grapefruit. And the good ones are like $2.69 or $2.89. I'm thinking, why is a grapefruit so expensive? It's not exotic fruit after
all. Now, when you used to eat them, we had a little knife that had little serrated edges, and we would cut
well,
around
that was
it
when
and,
my mother
and load it with
would
sugar.
Segment a grapefruit.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Cut it in half down the equator, and use that serrated blade, curved knife, which was curved the same shape as the grapefruit.
Yeah.
And my father insisted that every little segment had to be cut out of its cell. In the end, he would then, this is at home, he wouldn't do this ever in a restaurant. Listen, Marshall, we grew up in an era where a half a grapefruit or fruit salad or melon were the standard appetizers.
Yeah.
Shrimp cocktail was around, of course. That cost a lot of money. If you did a table d'hôte, a fixed-price dinner, usually included one of those three. And we, at home, always had grapefruit to start the meal, or melon in the summer. Then my father at home would squeeze the last drops of juice out of this still quite juicy grapefruit half into his spoon.
Did he put sugar on the grapefruit?
He did.
Yes,
he sprinkled
yes.
the top of the grapefruit with sugar.
That's what I would do.
Yeah, well, I wasn't allowed to do it. I did it from time to time, but my mother discouraged it with me. She couldn't control my father, but she discouraged me from that one.
Well,
the other discouraging thing was we were never allowed to put salt and pepper on our food until after we tasted it.
Wow.
Yeah, that was another one of my mother's things. And I totally agree. In fact, I did have salt and pepper. I made something the other night, and I did have salt and pepper on the table just in case. I'm not sensitive about that as a cook. And Bob immediately put salt on it. And I said, no, well, taste it first. It was my mother came up. Taste it first. That's already salted. You may not want any more salt. So, all right. Well, I did find my birthday is coming up. And I don't usually make a thing of my birthday, but there is a restaurant in my neighborhood that I haven't been to in a long time and that I used to really, really like. But somebody was telling me they went there for their birthday just last week and how terrific it was. So I decided to make a reservation for my birthday. And it's called Osteria Convivium. I just call it Convivium. I think if you looked it up as Convivium, you'd find it. It is very romantic in that it is decorated upstairs. There's two floors. Upstairs, which is the street level, retail store level, is decorated like a a country farmhouse, country, not our country, I would say Mediterranean farmhouse with lots of copper and wood and utensils hanging on the walls. And downstairs is a wine cellar. They have a garden in the summer. Anyway, I go to the menu, and I can't believe the prices are so moderate compared to everything I've been looking at, which I'm trying to think, and it's such a good restaurant. By the way, the chef was born in Sardinia but grew up in Rome, and his wife, who's American, is of Portuguese descent. And so they specialize in Italian and some Iberian, let's call it Iberian food. And anyway, so they have $25. So I'm looking at it and saying, $25 entrees? Nobody has $25 entrees anymore. You look at a new menu and it's like $32 entrees. Everything's got a three in front of it. So moving on to something that is actually a very good price right now, is, and I was surprised to see this recently, there's a lot of endive, or you could call it endive, in the market, Belgian endive in the market now, and it is very well priced. This is the high season for Belgian endive, the end of winter. It's a very interesting plant. Endive is in the chicory family, and we all know chicory, certainly in the northwest corner, from the gorgeous blue flowers in the summer. I guess they come up in June, and our roadsides are lined with these blue flowers, which in early spring provide good salad greens, that wild chicory. I used to pick it in my, I'd never had a lawn, I called it the short green growth. So in my short green growth, there was a lot of chicory, which got mowed and so never flowered, but until early May, I was able to pick it. Anyway, chicory is grown mainly for its roots, or always was until the middle of the 19th century. And we all know chicory root, like in New Orleans, they use ground roasted chicory root to supplement coffee. And poor people often, I don't know the prices anymore. It could be that chicory root is the same price as coffee, for all I know. But anyway, chicory was traditionally used as a coffee substitute and less expensive coffee substitute. And I'm forgetting who, but somebody discovered in the story goes, somebody in the Netherlands left his chicory roots in the root cellar over winter and went away. And when he came back at the end of the winter, they had sprouted these little, I guess you'd call them, how would you call the shape of an endive? Rocket-shaped leaves. That, by the way, another name for for endive is witloof, white leaf, because these were growing in a dark root cellar. They never got the sun. And in fact, to this minute, chicory that we eat, the witloof, the Belgian endive, is grown in dark cellars, and in fact never even touches soil these days. So when you get a chicory home, I keep calling it a chicory, it is a chicory, yeah, but it's endive. When you get the endive home, you can take off any bruised outer leaves or rinse it briefly, but then dry it. You do not have to really wash it.
To me, they always look like...
it is grown like mushrooms.
Yeah, to me, they always look like big bird feathers.
Yeah, well, the leaves themselves.
Yeah.
Do you remember, I guess it was the 80s and maybe even the 90s, it was a vegetable. You went to a fancy cocktail party, or even not so fancy, and people would serve little tidbits of food on a endive leaf because they're stiff.
Yeah.
So you could pick one up with your hand and eat something from it and eat the whole leaf. And, I must say, I like the whole idea and I still do this, except I do it at my kitchen table. Putting stuff in the endive. But if you're having company, it's a really good dipper. If you don't want to have a cracker or bread. Endive leaves are terrific dippers. But I don't eat it that way that often either. So they are slightly bitter. And I cook for somebody, Bob, who hates bitter. And I have some other friends who are sensitive to bitter. But I recently made, just because I'm stubborn and I really wanted to eat it, I didn't care, I says. I made an endive salad with a mustard vinaigrette, very classic French thing. And everybody said, this is not so bitter. I like this. And yeah, and I'm making one again today because, as I said, the price of endive is low when everything else is high. And I thought, well, it's a treat. And by the way, besides, it makes a great salad, and I am going to make it with a mustard vinaigrette today, very French, a little Dijon mustard, vinegar, my good Italian olive oil, and some very, very finely minced shallot, salt and pepper. Doesn't need any more. You can adjust the mustard the way you like it. It could be very mustardy, or it could be a little bit mustardy. I mean, it could basically be a vinaigrette with mustard, but you can decide. I don't like to put sweetener in my salad dressings, but a lot of people would add a couple drops of honey to that, or I wouldn't add sugar, but a couple of drops of honey I can understand. I would also add, for me, hot red pepper. But nobody else wants the hot red pepper. I might have to put it on at the end. By the way, it goes with... and then there's braised endive. Besides raw endive, that's a classic French thing. But also, I know Italians who braise endive. It is not a common vegetable in Italy, but you see it from time to time. And it is the first cousin of escarole, scarola, in the south of Italy, and curly endive, which the French call frise, and the Italians call cicoria, and they love wild chicory, which can be quite bitter, like dandelion leaves. Anyway, it is not unheard of. So when I was writing Naples at Table, a classic chicory, not endive, but chicory recipe in Naples is to make a stuffing of seasonings, not bread, garlic, parsley, pine nuts, raisins, and stuff the middle of the tiny heads that you can buy of escarole, and tie them up with a piece of string and braise it. So it's a lot of work. It's not easy to do because you try to hold a head of escarole in one hand so that the filling doesn't drop out while you're tying it with the other. And then in the end, they look like a mess. And in fact, I'm forgetting the dialect word, but in Naples they're also called kittens, little kittens, because they just look like a little furry ball. I mean, so after all that work, no presentation. So I decide one day I'm going to make the same thing, but with endive. And it did come out great, and the recipe is in Naples at Table. But I looked at it this morning, and I said, you know, I wouldn't do this again. Because, again, it's much too much fuss for the way I cook these days. But that said, braising endive is great. And I braise it the same way I braise fennel, which is I put it in a skillet, one that has a tight cover. And, I take that back. I like my skillet that has the knife cover, but that's another kind of braising. You know, Italians braise one way, the French braise another way. If you're not doing it the Italian way, you don't need the tight cover. So like with fennel, I just put it in the pan with water and olive oil and some salt and cook it until the vegetable, fennel, or endive or endive is tender and all the water has evaporated, and then I continue to cook it because now there's just some oil in the pan until it gets browned. Delicious. Endive, you lose the bitterness when you cook it this way. It becomes rather sweet, in fact, so I would not add sweetening to that. But what I might want to add is some lemon juice. Right. So that's and braised endive with lemon juice. And by the way, you could do the same thing with butter, and it would be delicious.
Now, is radicchio in the endive family?
It is. Right. It is in the endive. And there are different kinds of radicchio, too, you know. There's the round ball kind, and there's the tall, skinny kind, the Treviso type. Chicory, they're all the same. They're all in the same. Another one that I like, too, is puntarelle. Puntarelle is a Catagonian a chicory, and you don't eat the leaves, you eat only the stems. So there's a lot of preparation work here in cutting off the leaves. In Rome, where it is a specialty, you can buy it already prepped at the produce market. And in fact, I don't know if she's still there, but in the Testaccio market, there used to be a lady who just sat there all day stripping the leaves off of puntarelle, and then putting it in cold water, and it curls up. And by the way, that kind of chicory is dressed usually with an anchovy and lemon dressing, which would also be terrific on Belgian endive.
All right.
Anchovy goes very well with endive.
Right.
As does prosciutto, by the way.
Oh, prosciutto. But I like prosciutto like that. I don't like prosciutto strange. I like it when it's cooked hard and you put it in a salad and stuff like that.
I would take a head of braised endive and wrap it. This would be a very elegant appetizer or vegetable. And just wrap it in a thinly sliced piece of prosciutto, raw prosciutto. And you have to serve that with a sharp knife to cut it. Huh. But it's very delicious.
All right.
All right, now that I made myself hungry,
all right,
I guess it's time for breakfast.
It is. So I have some endive.
No, I have endive. We're going to have it for lunch. We're going to have a salad with a mustard vinaigrette. And I don't know what else.
All right. Well, enjoy your breakfast and lunch.
And to you, too, and to everyone.
All right, Arthur. I'll speak to you next week.
Bye.
Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio. You can also hear, of course, Arthur at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on Arthur Schwartz, the food maven.